Hello and welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast. We discuss what differences there are with Premier League games on the USA network, who the big winner is with the Pepe and DK transfers to Europe. We share what happens to Sky Sports News, and we look ahead to the latest news about the next MLS TV deal. Plus, we share our recommendations of what to watch this weekend. On the panel today, we have Kartik Krishnayar. My name is Christopher Harris. So listeners, and Kartik, first thing, Happy New Year. Hopefully it's going well so far. And we talked about this last week. We've got a lot of soccer to enjoy during the holidays. The impact of COVID, Kartik, we're recording this on Thursday. Four of the Serie A games have been postponed due to outbreaks, and it looks like Manchester City's game on Friday in the FA Cup is probably doubtful at this point. And then who knows for this weekend as far as the FA Cup matches, third round. And also you've got the Africa Cup of Nations. So fingers crossed. Any insights on those predicaments that we're in there, Kartik?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's unfortunately the world we live in, and it's now becoming an expectation this time of year, as the COVID is very, very seasonal in its peaks in certain parts of the world. And here in Florida, actually, where you and I live, the peaks have been, well, this is the new peak, right? But we've also had summer peaks both of the last 2 years, which is a little bit different than the rest of the U.S. and a little bit different than Europe as well. But it's just something we're now having to live with. And unfortunately, for whatever reason, there are a huge number of unvaccinated players in England disproportionate to other countries with top leagues. So there have been more postponements. I know Serie A is facing a rash of postponements this weekend now, but to this point, they haven't had to postpone any matches until now. Whereas England, the top four divisions, there have been actually, quite frankly, the Football League, there were more cancellations or more postponements than matches played over the holiday period. So, unfortunately, it is what it is.
Yeah, it's tricky, too, because probably most listeners, and you, Kartik, probably at this point, we know that there's been an outbreak of COVID during the last few weeks. And whether it's, I mean, my family's okay, but we've got brother-in-laws, sister-in-laws, we've got even cousins, a lot of neighbors. I mean, there's so many people have been sick. So hopefully, like you said, that too, that we can kind of get through this curve and then continue to have matches played around the world, really. And with Sunday's Africa Cup of Nations starting, that coverage will be on beIN Sports. But a lot of anticipation for that tournament, and hopefully that will go along smoothly, fingers crossed. Now, speaking of fingers crossed, Kartik, I'm sure the executives at NBC Sports were thinking, okay, great. Okay, NBC SN has gone, but USA Network now is the go-to place for Premier League matches. Having watched a lot of the games over the holiday period on USA Network, and then comparing that to NBC SN, any differences at all that you've seen, Kartik, in terms of coverage or amount of coverage?
No, it's the same. I don't know if it'll remain the same. I don't know if the bumper programming was a holiday thing and they're going to get to just showing matches during these periods when they show matches on USA. I don't know if there'll be a reduced number of matches shown on USA versus NBCSN. But so far, it's basically the same. The thing I would point out, though, in this conversation is that pre- and post-match coverage tends to be more extensive on Peacock than it is on linear. Anyway, for NBC Sports at this point. So there is now a difference. It used to be a difference between NBCSN and Peacock. Now it's a difference between USA and Peacock.
Yeah, what I noticed is that the level of coverage from USA to NBCSN, no difference. I mean, it's the same cast. It's the same kind of, it feels the same, right? It doesn't feel like it's a different network. But what I would say is with all the changes, it does look like there's going to be fewer games on the sister network, CNBC, looking ahead to the schedule for the next couple of weeks. So that means the same coverage on the USA as NBCSN, but possibly more games on Peacock. So the games that might have been on CNBC in the past We might see more of those on Peacock. So take a typical Saturday in the Premier League, and usually that 10 a.m. to noon window, you would have one game on US, well, one game on NBCSN, and then one game on sometimes on CNBC. And now, you mean, you would think that maybe one game on USA Network and then one game on CNBC. But now we're seeing the one game on USA Network and everything else on Peacock. So that's the only thing. With CNBC, it's not that they're not showing sports. So I looked at the schedule for the next couple of weekends. They are showing rugby games on Saturday mornings and Saturday afternoons. But a lot of this is, I think, really kind of more games move into Peacock. And we've looking ahead to the schedule for the next couple of weeks, two games that are coming up that are going to be on Peacock, the Tottenham Arsenal game. And I think it's the Chelsea-Man City game, Kartik. It's going to be...
that's on Peacock.
So both of those on Peacock. So those are the only places to go for that. For me personally, I mean, having the games on Peacock, I already subscribe to Peacock. I don't mind. I would like all the games to be available on Peacock. But what I've found of late is I'm watching Gold Rush more and more. To watch all the action from all the games at once. And that's helped in terms of my enjoyment of the Premier League. I'm not sure about you, Kartik, if your viewing habits have changed at all.
Not really. I mean, I watched Gold Rush pretty regularly when it was offered as part of NBC Sports Live Extra, was that called? Right. They've had so many incarnations of these things, I can't even keep track of what it... That was before NBC Sports Gold. And then they had Gold Rush at times on Gold. So, yeah, I keep an eye on it. Now, what's ended up happening is the 3 p.m. UK kickoffs during this holiday period, there have inevitably been postponements due to COVID during them. So what we've had is maybe only one or two matches kicking off at that time, and Gold Rush has been less useful than it typically is. But as COVID cases go back down, which they will inevitably, then we're going to have more use for that, and they are now showing it on Peacock. There was a lot of consternation, Chris, as you and I both know. A lot of people were writing into us, complaining to us directly that Peacock wasn't showing Gold Rush. Now they are, so that's a bonus for the viewers.
Okay, so looking back at this holiday period that we've had, and there's been some fantastic games, but there were three in particular that stood out, Kartik, and I want to get your take on which of these three were your favorite. And also, is it your match of the season so far in the Premier League? So there was Chelsea Liverpool, Spurs against Liverpool, and then Arsenal against Manchester City. What do you think
of those three? Spurs Liverpool. Overall for the season, I would say Liverpool Man City closely edges out Spurs Liverpool. Here's my case against the other two, and they're not cases. They were spectacular games. In fact, I hosted a Twitter space this past Sunday talking about how fantastic these three matches were over the holiday period. So I agree that they were all fantastic matches, but here's the reason I go for Spurs-Liverpool over the other two. Chelsea-Liverpool was fantastic end-to-end and frantic, but then you could see the fitness levels of both teams dropped off after about minute 60. And so I would say the last 30 minutes of that match were like a typical Premier League match, whereas the first 60 minutes were played at the same level as maybe that Liverpool-Man City game I'm talking about earlier in the season, back from October. Arsenal-Manchester City, I think, was fantastic in terms of its drama. And again, the first half, I think, Arsenal was outstanding. Where I would say that there was it was lesser than the Spurs-Liverpool match is that you saw two teams tactically that were doing kind of similar things and canceling each other out. And once you had the controversial VAR decision on Xhaka and then the Gabriel sending off, it felt like the game, there was an inevitability playing out that Manchester City would get a goal. Still, Arsenal were fantastic. Spurs-Liverpool, to me, was the tactical battle of the season. You saw Conte set up his Spurs team in such a way to cancel out Liverpool and sucker Liverpool in, knowing Alexander-Arnold and Robertson. Remember, Robertson started that match. That was the match he got the red card in. But to sucker them in, stay very narrow, and hit them on the break. Now, that's easier said than done. The way Conte set up Spurs was a specific way to get at Liverpool to force one of their midfielders to play as kind of an auxiliary center back, therefore forcing, and we know how good Alexander-Arnold and Robertson are, and most of the attacks come through the flanks anyway from Liverpool, but kind of disrupting their midfield play by doing that. So I thought it was just, and then obviously Klopp had a counter also with that, which I think made that game, at least from my perspective, the match to watch over the holiday period, because it was two tactical, maybe two tactical geeks canceling each other out, and it was a 2-2 match.
All right, Spurs against Liverpool, and this topic will come up later in the podcast. I will reveal that later, the reason why. Just a couple more things, Kartik. So big transfer signings over the holiday period too. Ricardo Pepi moving to Augsburg in the Bundesliga, and then Daryl DK moving to West Bromwich Albion. For me, as somebody who analyzes the television and streaming side of soccer, and you too, of course, for me, I think it's a nice boost for ESPN Plus. I mean, Augsburg and West Brom, most of those games, a lot of those games will be on ESPN Plus. But the question for you, Kartik, is Augsburg, what do you think the chances are for them staying up this season in the Bundesliga?
I think they have a very good chance. You know, they actually have some very good attacking players. Now you're adding Ricardo Pepi to the mix. Their defending hasn't been so great at times. But I like their chances of staying up. I think they have a very good chance to, at worst, I think they'll be in that 16th position, which is a playoff. If I were a betting man, I would say they stay up. And that's good for Pepi, although he has to break into a squad. They've spent a lot of money, especially for them, on this player. So I guess he will be in the squad, but he's going to have some competition to stay in that squad. I know U.S. men's national team fans who are very, many of whom are very arrogant and don't know very much about European club football, but they feigned this incredible knowledge and this incredible passion for European football. Even though, quite frankly, and this goes to the YouTubers, particularly about the U.S. MNT, don't know anything. Pepi, they think it's a move to a lesser team. Well, it's a team with a lot of good attacking players who are older than Pepi, but they he's going to have to be at the top of his game to stay on that side, particularly when they're fighting relegation. So I think it's a good move for him, and it's another potentially positive move for ESPN and ESPN Plus with having another American star in the Bundesliga. Although, you know, they've tried to ride that the last year and a half, and it hasn't necessarily had the impact ratings-wise that we had hoped it would.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it, too, injuries, right? Whether it's Gio Reyna, a lot of things that have kind of gotten in the way of it being a successful run of games where you're seeing a lot of American stars being featured. And then you had players moving away to different clubs. You mean Josh Sargent moving to Norwich, etc. But one more thing, Kartik, before we head into the news section, and I want to get your take on this. I understand you've been watching some soccer documentaries, and anything of note?
Yeah, so Where Eagles Dare, which is a documentary about Crystal Palace, which I found on Prime and assumed, I had seen it a while ago on my Prime list, and I assumed it was the same documentary we got on NBCSN. Remember the Goalhanger film that Gary Lineker did with Ian Wright on Palace? Well, as it turns out, it's not. It's actually actually a documentary that was filmed at the time about the 2012-2013 season, the year Dougie Friedman left to go to Bolton. Ian Holloway comes in, they struggle, but then they limp their way into the playoff and they somehow advance from the playoff. It's a five-part series, and it's transposed with interviews from 2019 or 2020 with all of the players. So it's a fly-on-the-wall documentary about a season, an important season in Crystal Palace's history, with a kind of a modern perspective, or with some hindsight, right? With 6 years, 7 years later, all of the major players being interviewed and talking about events. So it actually, to me, is much better than the seasonal fly-in-the-wall documentaries you see on Prime and you see on Netflix. This one really took me, and there was a lot of honesty in it. And they showed, I still just remember the Dougie Friedman period at Palace, how excited Palace fans were to have a legend of the club back, managing them after a period of financial calamity for the club, and the club basically being rescued at the 11th hour from becoming insolvent. And remember, I was working for the NASL at the time, and we had a Crystal Palace affiliate club, Crystal Palace in Baltimore, in our league the first year, the year that all happened, and that club collapsed as a result of Palace's financial issues in the UK. But so I had a little more insight than maybe I would have had otherwise into what was going on at Palace with Steve Parrish coming in and some of the other things happening. But it was fantastic because it had this hindsight with Johnny Williams and Wilfred Zaha and Yannick Bolasie and Dougie Friedman. And about Friedman leaving and going to Bolton, they really play that thing out with a lot of honesty. So it's a 5-part documentary. I highly recommend it. It's buried on Amazon Prime. It showed up on one of my recommendations months ago, and I ignored it because, I thought it was that NBCSN thing that we saw years ago, and I was like, whatever. But then I actually hit the description this past week and was like, okay, maybe I'm going to be interested in this, and it was engrossing.
All right, what to watch this weekend? My recommendation is Sunday, Nottingham Forest at home against Arsenal in the FA Cup third round. The game kicks off at 12:15 Eastern time on ESPN+. Arsenal, you mean they're flying right now. I mean, playing some really good football. Nottingham Forest too. Nottingham Forest under manager Steve Cooper, former Swansea manager, doing very, very well. And I think in ninth position in the league. Hit a little bit of a patch of form. But in terms of this one, I'm sure Forest are going to go all out. Guns are blazing, playing some really good football. And looking forward to watching this one on ESPN+. What about you, Kartik? What's your recommendation?
Well, before I get to my recommendation, why is it that these two teams always play in cup competitions and generally play in that time slot? So I was just, it was funny. I didn't realize they had drawn each other again until you picked it as your match of the week and yesterday, and we were corresponding. And I said, oh my goodness, I still distinctly remember Eric Lehigh scoring a goal for Forest to eliminate Arsenal, in the Eric Lehigh being an American, in the same exact time slot 4 years ago, that kickoff on Sunday. And then I also remember the two of them playing, I think, in the same time slot, because I was working with a gentleman, I'll leave him unnamed, but who was a big Forest fan a few years ago, and they played in that same time slot in another FA Cup. Now, maybe that was the fourth round, but I think it was the third round. So this is a great game to watch, but it's also, why are they always drawn together, these two teams? It's just one of the flukes of draws, I guess.
Who's the one in the Champions League that always draws? Dortmund and Real Madrid? Or
Dortmund and Real, and Shakhtar and Inter are always in the same group for some reason, too.
Yeah, it's funny. Weird. It's funny the way it works. But that should be a good one. What about you, Kartik? What's your game?
Yeah, same time slot, and I'm going to be flipping back and forth. Roma-Juventus. Assuming the match takes place, okay, by the time everyone listens to this, let's hope it's still on. Roma-Juve, I think, with a winter break and with a couple of decent results, although again another setback, maybe Jose is getting through to this Roma squad. Juventus has been hit or miss. They haven't played very well, in my opinion, at all this season. But they have their heads above water and can still get to the top four. So big game on Paramount Plus, 12:30, and we have one of these big Serie A matches every week, it feels like.
Yeah, more and more lately, in the last couple of years, really, I've been watching two games at once or more than two games at once, just because there's so many ones to choose from and it's hard to, just pick one because you feel like you're missing out on the other one. So for sure, I'm going to have this one side by side, Roma, Juventus and Forest, Arsenal, as well, I'm sure, many games over the weekend. All right, let's move on to TV streaming news, and this is the first time we've actually had one of these episodes in a while because we had a quiz show, and I think we took a break for a little bit of time, but so we're catching up with some of the news. This one is not the most brand new news. This is from a couple of weeks ago, but it's still very, very interesting, and Kartik, I'll have you take it from here.
Yeah, it's in its next TV deal that will start in 2023, industry sources suggest MLS is seeking $300 million a season, up from roughly $90 million it brings in from ESPN, Fox, and Univision combined now from the 15 to 22 time period. MLS Commissioner Don Garber said all of MLS's content will be leveraged, including games in local markets which we've talked about before, them buying that back, and the league's data rights for the 2023 media package. MLS is bullish given the 1.8 million who watch MLS on Thanksgiving Day, as well as the signing of Lorenzo Insigne from Napoli. And my understanding is there might be more star Italian players that show up there. I should mention this to the listeners now. This is a little off topic, but maybe it corresponds. Bob Bradley is a great admirer of Italian football. Maybe you realize that with the way his team's set up, but really Bradley's greatest inspiration is watching Sarri's Milan teams. And that's kind of why Michael Bradley, his son, modeled his game after Andrea Pirlo. Also, Bradley, a big fan of Capello. So I would not be surprised if more Italian players come to Toronto now that Bob Bradley will be at a club that has a budget for that, and also a willingness to go sign those sorts of players. LAFC was looking for players from Latin America for obvious reasons, obvious demographic reasons where they are. So I'm actually very excited about that from MLS's perspective. Bradley being in Toronto, I think he's a great coach, quite possibly the best American coach ever. And I know his affection for Italian football. And it's no coincidence to me he signed Insigne right off the bat. And I would look for more of those signings. That will hopefully move the needle for MLS because those are big names.
Yeah, we've seen this before, though, too, right, Kartik? We've seen, I mean, big signings, whether it's Frank Lampard, Steven Gerrard, David Beckham, etc., and many, many other players. And it's always with the thought that it moves the needle, and it hardly ever does, unfortunately. Insigne, it'd be great. I mean, he's a fantastic player, but will that move the needle? And I'm sure there's going to be people watching the Toronto games that in the past wouldn't have done, maybe, perhaps. But will that move the needle as much as needed? But at this point, though, too, with 2023 coming up in that the next TV deal, which will be signed and announced in this quarter, there's always that possibility, right? They can kind of say, like, hey, this is going to be great. This is going to bump up the numbers and use that as a selling point.
Yeah, I think that's probably what they're hoping for. I don't think that was the intent of the signing because, I know a lot about Bob Bradley's management. I'm a big fan of his, and I think Insigne is the kind of guy he'd have wanted, period. And there are more Italian players he'd want and that I think he's going to pursue. Here's the big chief distinction between Insigne and Giovinco, for those who have made that comparison, by the way. Insigne is a core player for the national team. Giovinco was always a player kind of on the fringes of the national team. Prandelli did take him to Euro 2012, and he was a player I liked. But Insigne is, truthfully, in this era where Italy's talent, even though I know they won the Euros, but the talent of Italian football has kind of been down in terms of domestic players. Insigne is one of the standout Italian players of this generation, and he's still in the national team. I don't think Roberto Mancini is going to say, oh, because Insigne is at Toronto, he's not going to select him for the national team. They need him. They need him to qualify at this point. So if they don't qualify, maybe they move on. But I think he will definitely be there in March for the playoffs, even though he's playing in MLS.
So MLS is seeking $300 million per season, and as you said, Kartik, roughly $90 million right now per season that they're getting. But out of that $90 million, what, $30 million of that goes to U.S. Soccer Federation. So really, for Major League Soccer, it's only, well, not only, but $60 million a season. So how realistic do you think that $300 million target is per season for them?
I don't think it's very realistic. I think they'll go over the $90 million. I think what we'll see is somewhere $200 to $225 million is my guess. They've added important markets, obviously, since that last TV deal. They have, again, a second team in LA. By the way, they had promised that in 2015 to those negotiating. So, and they had a second team in LA previously. Atlanta, which they had promised. Miami, Fort Lauderdale, which they had promised. However, I think Nashville and Austin are really... Cincinnati doesn't do much to move the needle, quite frankly. Minnesota, not really. Although Minnesota had been announced right as that deal was being consummated, almost, I think, the same week. But I think Austin and Nashville moved the needle pretty significantly. I think you also have the buyback of local TV rights, which helps. And then you have the launching of MLS Next Pro, which is going to get them into some other markets or some other people, like someone like me. I'm more probably as interested in watching that league as I would be in MLS or USL, because I think there's going to be a lot of key players that come out of that league. It's right now, all reserve teams, with the exception of the Rochester team partly owned by Jamie Vardy, that's joined the league. But my understanding is from talking, and as we talked about on the last time we did one of these sorts of podcasts before the break, I've launched a new project, Local Soccer TV, and talking to the people that I'm talking to for that project, it sounds like there are a lot of independent clubs that are at least having conversations with MLS about that league. So if that league balloons up in numbers and is in some other key markets where there aren't necessarily MLS teams, or the MLS teams aren't as popular as maybe they need to be, that could help their TV deal. So that's why I think they'll get over $200 million, the combination of local TV rights, MLS Next Pro, and in particular Austin and Nashville, more than Charlotte and Cincinnati, etc. But I don't think they get the $300 million. I think not having the U.S. piece probably costs them. And I know the U.S. is probably not going to have qualifying for 2026, so people have said to me, well, it's really kind of a worthless package because of that. But the U.S. will have a lot of friendlies and potentially do other things to generate revenue with matches. And that includes losing She Believes if from that, which happens annually, which is part of that package with the bundle, and losing all the USMNT friendlies, many of which have been kind of these attractive friendlies against top European nations. So although, again, that's subject to change with the possibility of the Nations League being changed by UEFA. But right. I don't think they'll get the $300 million because they've lost the US piece is my point.
Yeah, so I think the addition of Charlotte is going to help them big time. Which I'm sure it's coming. Las Vegas is going to be interesting to see what that does to the interest in the league. And in comparison's sake here, so they're seeking $300 million per season. Right now, NBC in this last deal with the Premier League, they're paying over $450 million per season. If MLS was the top dog in the United States, just as the NFL is, I mean, NFL being kind of, you mean the top American football league, MLS probably could get $300 million per season. But the reality is that MLS is not the top dog. You mean there's leagues from around the world that they're much, much bigger and better. And most viewers will go to watching those games rather than MLS. So, I'm with you, Kartik. I think the $300 million per season is a good target to go for. But the reality is, in terms of the number of people watching the games, even with expansion into these different cities, the TV numbers, the Thanksgiving Day was fantastic. The 1.8 million, that was wonderful. But averaging roughly about 250,000 per game across ESPN and Fox, and I think Univision too, roughly, is not worth $300 million per season. All right, let's move on, Kartik. And we've been actually working on trying to find out the status of Sky Sports News. So we talked about in the first segment NBCSN shutting down. And for those viewers and listeners, you would remember sometimes that NBCSN on weekdays, for about an hour, would show Sky Sports News in the morning around about lunchtime, and you could watch Sky Sports News and get updated on all the great details about the different leagues and even other sports too, cricket, rugby, etc. Well, with NBCSN gone away, and USA airing Law and Order reruns during that time slot, I've been following up with NBC Sports to try to find out what is happening to Sky Sports News. And I found out that NBC confirmed to me that Sky Sports News is not currently on the schedule and did not have any further information to share. So when there's good news, NBC Sports puts out a press release. When there's bad news, I have to go digging and hunting for it. I got that. But it looks very doubtful that Sky Sports News will be back. The only possibility maybe is Peacock. However, that does present challenges too, because Sky Sports News is a live show. It has commercial breaks, and Peacock or NBC Sports does not have the rights to all of those highlights that Sky Sports News shows. So you would need to have someone kind of basically watching the live feed and then even switching the actual picture to something else. It's very time intensive. There could be a lot of things going on. So even Peacock's very doubtful. But I will stay on top of this story, and at any opportunity I get to speak to NBC Sports, I'll try to find out whether or not Sky Sports News, if there's any chance for it to come back, because there is a lot of loyal viewers out there that did watch that show. But Kartik, I mean, is this the reality? Is this the reality that maybe Sky Sports News wasn't bringing in the viewing numbers that made it worthwhile, perhaps?
Yeah, I don't... I guess if you're a Liverpool fan or an Arsenal fan or a Chelsea fan, it's great because all they do is talk about those clubs in kind of sensational ways. But for people who are fans of the rest of the league, didn't really matter. If you're fans of other leagues, it didn't matter either. So, I probably wasn't bringing in the numbers required, and I think it was just filler in a programming schedule of NBCSN, where there wasn't enough programming to justify keeping the channel open to begin with. So they were having to fill it with things like the auto auctions and Sky Sports News that I don't think move numbers, but they have to fill that programming space. The other option is to do the paid programming, which CNBC does. NBC Universal through the years has had this back and forth about what to do with CNBC, which is a business news channel, on the weekends. At times they've had political coverage, at times they've had sports, at times they've had infomercials, at times they've had talk shows, and it seems like they keep going through that cycle over and over again as to what to show on CNBC. And as you mentioned earlier in our show now, they're showing sports again on the weekends. But I think NBCSN represented a little bit of that when there weren't live sporting events, so it's probably just easier to shutter the channel. I don't think Sky Sports News was moving numbers.
What I would say, though, too, though, is that NBC Sports now not having any daily soccer news show, there is kind of a gaping hole. I mean, there's a kind of a black hole. I mean, at least with ESPN, you've got ESPN FC that brings you up to date on in terms of the latest news, discussion, analysis. And I think, even going back in the day to Fox Soccer Channel, when they had their daily news program, that was great. And when that left, there was a big outcry from a lot of fans saying, "Okay, I mean, this stinks. We watch that daily to stay up on top of the news." But I guess in some ways too, with social media being so accessible, it's not as big of a loss these days. All right, Kartik, let's move on. So we talked about NBCSN going away and USA Network coming on board. What are the numbers look like for those first kind of opening weekend of games, and how did those do?
Yeah, outstanding weekend. City versus Arsenal versus City at the Emirates. 7:30 a.m. Eastern time kickoff, New Year's Day. 4:30 a.m. Pacific time kickoff. Highest numbers for an early kickoff game in almost 4 years, about 3.5 years, for a game on an NBC network. And there was an NBCSN game in September, I think, of 2018 that got a higher number. And then the Chelsea-Liverpool match, which is an 11:30 a.m. Eastern time, 8:30 a.m. Pacific time kickoff on January 2nd, got the highest numbers, apparently the third highest number ever for an NBC game, a game on NBC Sports on cable. Truthfully, I don't remember the two games that got a higher number. It was an incredible number, English language number on USA Network. So over 1.1 million. So really good start for USA Network this weekend. Obviously, we're going to need more data points to properly analyze it, but I'm not surprised. We had this conversation on the podcast a few weeks ago. I thought going to USA would give a slight uptick to the numbers, and so far they have.
Yeah, and I think part of that context for me is just the that brand loyalty that I had with NBCSN. That I kind of felt it's almost like your favorite girlfriend, and she leaves you, and you feel heartbroken. You're like, you spent some quality time, some great memories, and now all of a sudden this is new girl on the block, and you have to get to know her a little bit better. So maybe for me it'll just take some time to get to warm up to USA Network, but it's so far, I guess, positive to see that the coverage hasn't changed. However, it will be interesting to see it in terms of the Peacock influence and what that means, if that's more games, less games. So far it looks like it's going to be more games on Peacock. All right, and then one piece of news, one more last piece of news, and that's CBS Sports has announced that 6 of the UEFA Champions League Round of 16 games will be available on over-the-air television between February 15th and March 9th. That includes PSG Real Madrid, Inter Liverpool, Chelsea Lille, Atletico Madrid, Manchester United, Liverpool, Inter, and then Real Madrid and PSG. So some big blockbuster games there. Kartik, I have a feeling on that one. It might be that, yes, CBS Sports wants to go ahead and get these big games on the big network and increase the number of viewers there, as well as, I'm sure, mentioning Paramount Plus, and that's the place to go to watch all the games. But I think part of it, too, is probably CBS Sports thinking about the next TV deal, thinking, okay, how can we impress UEFA and continue to increase the numbers so that when it is time to discuss renewals, we're in a good place?
Yeah, I think the big question in terms of renewals is that the cycle is so short, right? The right cycle, that you have to maximize your what you're doing in year one. Turner learned that they didn't really get the formula right until it was too late, and so the property is a sort of poison chalice that way. Now, I guess CBS had this head start by assuming Turner's previous the last year and a half of their three-year deal. But I think we're now in a position where CBS really has to test how well this will do mid-afternoon on network television. Will it get better ratings than whatever their affiliates are showing at the time? I mean, they don't have any national programming at the time, so it's easy for them to throw it on. But does it get bigger numbers than, I don't know, Dr. Phil or whatever syndicated program is on the local channels, local CBS affiliates, and local news, right? Because I think it'll cut in a little bit into local news. So that's the big test, but it's really encouraging to see. And they're picking matches that I think will all potentially move the needle. I do think PSG Real Madrid is a little risky that they're showing both legs of that. But I think the matches that involve English teams, we know that there's a baseline number for those matches, right, in English language. We even saw it with Turner, right, because Turner was showing those games on TNT. They had a huge uptick in ratings over FS1, which is, to me, a very similar like-for-like comparison to the former NBCSN and USA Network. TNT, much more mainstream network among average Americans than sports networks are. So I think CBS will do okay with the Chelsea, Liverpool, Man United matches. PSG, Real Madrid, I'm a little concerned about.
I think with CBS Sports, it's important that they find the right balance with their studio coverage. So when they first started showing the UEFA Champions League, it was a little bit more serious. And then as time went on, it became a little bit more jokey. And of late, it seems to be a lot more slapstick. So I think it's important that they find that balance between trying to provide some really intelligent analysis and then not get too much into the jokey side, but have some kind of lighthearted humor. That's okay, that's no problem. But when that becomes kind of the main thrust and the analysis becomes lesser, then I think it's not as appealing. But for you, Kartik, when you think about the UEFA Champions League over the years, we've had broadcasters from ESPN, Fox Sports, Turner Sports, and CBS Sports all having the rights to the competition. For you, who do you feel got it right the best, if anyone? Because it is kind of, when you look at it, it is kind of what one of the top soccer tournament club soccer tournaments in the world.
Yeah, I think there have been pros and cons with everybody, right? I mean, I think there was an access. And accessibility, I should say, with Fox, right? I do think there were some interesting things Turner did with their coverage, although obviously there was the clunky side too. And CBS gave at least a more professional approach, and I think they're giving us an incredible amount of bumper programming. At the same time, there's a kind of an inherent silliness in some of the things they do that's now beginning to grate on me. But it's just, unfortunately, Chris, this is not a reflection of what I think. This is a reflection of what people I talk to think. There's a greater credibility for events when they're on CBS or NBC or ABC, ABC/ESPN than if they're on other networks. So that's perhaps unfair to TNT, to Turner, and to Fox. But at least among soccer fans I talk to that also like other sports, they think it's a more serious tournament now or a more serious watch because it's on CBS. That's not my opinion. You know, I think Fox did a lot of good things with the property. I was not as down on Turner as everybody else. I was kind of down on him, but not as down as everybody else. But there's just a built-in bias. This goes back to why I think the Premier League fans are so comfortable and happy with NBC and are always freaking out about it going somewhere else potentially, because there's just a comfort level with the ESPN assuming the role of ABC. There's no ABC Sports anymore, right? It's ESPN. Mm-hmm. Those three networks, ESPN, CBS, and NBC, there's just a comfort level with them that there isn't with other broadcasters.
Yeah, my take is that no one has perfected it yet. And you look at the Premier League, and you can say with NBC Sports, they've mastered it. It's not perfect by any means. They've made mistakes too. But in terms of what NBC Sports has done with the Premier League, it's top level. And with CBS Sports, I think they have the potential to really own the UEFA Champions League and really to perfect it. But to me, it's inconsistent. There's too much chop and change. Every kind of game week, you don't know who's going to be on the set. There's been so many different changes. I mean, I'm sure a lot of it is because of COVID and and just the way that everything's been so fluid. But kind of going into every week, you're not sure who's going to be on the set. And it's hard to build that chemistry. I mean, when they had Thierry Henry, that was fantastic. But then he was missing some of the last couple of weeks in the last group stage. But I look back and I look at, I mean, Turner Sports, Fox Sports, ESPN. And I guess there's pluses and minuses. And CBS Sports, same thing with them too. They have the opportunity, though, I think, to really raise the bar and to improve that and get it better, but they're not there yet. All right, listeners, let's move on and talk about listener mailbag. We've got a bunch of comments from you, the listeners. Kartik, this one's for you. This one's from Jeff. Kartik, I want to start watching women's soccer, and I'm looking for a few suggestions. Just want to watch fun, attacking soccer. Any recommendations for a few teams that would be good to follow? Thank you.
Yeah, I like Atleti and Barca in Spain. I like watching Chelsea under Emma Hayes in the FAWSL. Arsenal has been quite good to watch with their Dutch influence of late. Manchester City were great to watch until this season. This season has been a disaster, but they'll recover. So that's a good team to watch. And obviously Lyon, a little bit down now. They're a good team to watch still. And PSG is a very good team to watch. Here in the U.S., the nature of NWSL, the single entity nature of NWSL and the allocation system, all of that makes the teams, to me, reflect one another, right? They look the same. The only team that was different to me was North Carolina Courage under Paul Riley. Obviously, we know what's happened with that. So I would recommend watching teams from Europe. And NWSL, you could pick any random team. They generally play the same way, with the exception of the Courage. And to a lesser extent, Portland, when Mark Parsons was managing them, had a bit of a different style of play, although they could resort to the same sort of tactic also. Just so I can make this clear, and I hope I know this might elicit a lot of angry people, because American soccer fans are very protective of NWSL. And I'm not saying the leagues in Europe are better than NWSL. I think on the whole they probably aren't. But the NWSL is a much more physical league, which also has more athleticism as part of its as part of what drives it than the leagues in Europe, which are much more tactical and technical. So that would be the difference, I would say.
Yeah, to me, though, to Kartik, it sounds like you're talking about Major League Soccer in many ways, where it is more physical and athleticism does make a difference, while some of the other leagues, whether it's Europe or elsewhere, are more technically gifted.
Although the best athletes that play this sport in the world on the men's side are not playing in MLS. They are playing in NWSL. So the best athletes, the best athletic players, you know, your equivalents of your Mbappes and your Pogbas are playing in NWSL. But it's also an excessively physical league, much like MLS and USL and the US men's leagues. And the tactics are just not there the way they are in Europe. I mean, you watch Emma Hayes and Chelsea. I mean, I think she could manage at the highest level of the men's game. Maybe that's a biased take, but I watch Chelsea. They're so well organized. The team is so technical. You see the patterns of play. It's beautiful to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Jeff, we've got a women's soccer TV schedule page at worldsoccertalk.com. A lot of the games that Kartik mentioned, as far as Barcelona, Atletico Madrid, etc., some of the European teams, you can see those through the UEFA Women's Champions League, which is available for free through YouTube. And then the WSL is available through the FA Player and also ATA Football. And then NWSL is available through Paramount Plus and CBS Sports. But for all the information, you can get more details at worldsoccertalk.com. Next up is Corey on a different note. Corey says, I was surprised to hear of your tone and takeaways from the pod recently, where ESPN was criticized for overhyping La Liga, saying that the quality of the football should speak for itself. In years past, your podcast took virtually every U.S. network to task for not doing more to promote their respective leagues. I recall examples being beIN Sports with Serie A, Fox with the Bundesliga, and then MLS, and then ESPN with Serie A most recently. So which is preferred for diehard fans who would be watching these leagues weekly? Selling storylines and potential star players or not? I would also suggest that there's a difference between marketing hype, which I think you guys were getting at with ESPN and La Liga, and the blinders that some personalities show in their studio in game analysis, which you dinged NBC on in the past with the Premier League. And Corey, these are really, really good opinions, and we actually got a lot of feedback too from other listeners through social media that said similar things in terms of, I can't believe World Soccer Talk is hating on La Liga. And what we were saying is that it's okay to hype La Liga. I just felt that they were overhyping La Liga. It was just too much. I'll give you one example from Kartik mentioned earlier in the podcast what's been his favorite game from the holiday period. I had no idea what it was, but he said Spurs against Liverpool. Well, Spurs against Liverpool on a Sunday in December, and then on ESPN FC, they start the show on that Sunday, and instead of going to saying, okay, Spurs against Liverpool, let's lead with that, what an incredible game that was from the world of football today, they lead the broadcast with Real Madrid 0, Cadiz 0. So they start off with a nil-nil, and analyzing a nil-nil game and talking about, how poor the game was. Well, not how poor the game was, but how inefficient Real Madrid is in terms of playing against Cadiz. And then later they went to Spurs against Liverpool. So that's part of it, I think, is the overhyping. And La Liga is a good league. I enjoy watching La Liga. But anyone who's watched Barcelona this season will see that they're a pretty, I wouldn't say poor team, but way below average of what we expect to see when we watch Barcelona. And maybe that's part of my criticism of La Liga this season, is that when I do watch Barcelona, I'm always disappointed. I mean, defensively worse than before, which they were bad before. They're just a mess. And maybe that was part of kind of my criticism of La Liga, where I've been watching a bunch of the games but have not been that excited by what I've seen. But overall, I mean, we like La Liga. We enjoy La Liga. We like any soccer. We just feel that ESPN Plus especially is just overhyping it too much, to the point of where it's starting to kind of be a little bit of a turnoff. Kartik, do you agree or disagree, or have anything else to add on this one?
Yeah, I tend to agree, although what's happened is during the holiday period, you had kind of a more proper drilled down in-depth look at the Premier League on ESPN FC, like they traditionally had. So they had some really good shows.
But that's because there's no La Liga games on.
Well, yeah. So I'm saying, right, they reverted to form once La Liga wasn't playing. So it's not that they've completely changed their trajectory. It's just when La Liga's playing, there are different editorial priorities, it seems. That having been said, right, I mean, I still think The show is really good. You just have to sit through some of it to get to what you might want. The thing that I have noticed is there's less Bundesliga coverage than there's been even before they got the Bundesliga rights. Right? They were still talking about it before they got the rights when it was on Fox. Now it's really been put down further down on the pecking order. The interesting thing, though, is that they put out this Gavin Jules podcast, right, on the ESPN FC podcast stream with Marcotti and Jules Lorenz. And they're not talking La Liga very much, even though I know they both cover that league. They're talking much more Premier League than anything else. And then, obviously, because of Gab, they talk a lot of Italy, talk a lot of Serie A. So I think it's an ESPN FC thing. I guess that show has been attached to La Liga now.
Yeah, which it wasn't so much in the past before. But good points there, definitely from Corey and listeners. And let's move on to next one, which is Nick. Nick is talking about FIFA here. Nick says, is there any legal framework at all that cements FIFA's status as the world governing body and would compel countries to go along with a biannual World Cup? Couldn't the 10 largest European countries just say they're not going to participate and the whole thing immediately loses legitimacy? If those countries plus Argentina and Brazil broke away from FIFA, FIFA basically would become powerless and have no financial commercialization power. You could make the same case for the biggest clubs breaking away from UEFA. It seems to me like the current football governance structure is a house of cards that is only standing because everybody has benefited from it up until now. We tend to view these fights as right versus wrong, the greedy versus the people. In reality, I see these as equally greedy factions that are competing for power and money and nothing more. One clubs, league FAs, confederations, and FIFA are all just engaging in power politics, trying to grab larger slices of the pie. The only losers are players who get overworked and fans who see their traditions disappear or get commercialized and sold back to them. Wow, Nick, this is some great feedback. Kartik, care to agree on this one?
Yeah, I've often wondered, right? FIFA has this has created this structure where they are the world governing body, and they have more power than most NGOs, non-government organizations. They have more power than most governments. And then their affiliate or associated federations all act as if they are voluntary organizations, but in fact they are monopoly government organizations in reality, or service a governing organization. They, because laws are different from nation to nation, it might be difficult to break them up, right? But I think that there's something very inherently wrong in terms of the governance of the sport where one organization... So, for example, I'll just give this example, Nick. Here in the U.S., U.S. Soccer, in some of the lawsuits they face, say that they are a completely voluntary organization to join. And if when you join, you submit to the rules of U.S. Soccer and the rules of FIFA. But you have no choice. If you don't join U.S. Soccer and be a member of FIFA, you can't play the sport in an organized fashion. Period. Because of the way the game is structured. So I don't know. I mean, maybe it would have to take 20 or 30 top countries saying, no, we're not going to do this to stop them. But yes, in reality, they may not have the legal framework in so many words, but I think they do have a way of compelling everybody to go along with them, which is an unnatural monopoly, as I said, that they've acquired, that crosses national boundaries, crosses oceans, all of this stuff, which to me is very dangerous.
Yeah, I think to me it's the reason why this whole biennial World Cup idea is so fascinating, because it is at the heart of it is a power struggle. It's not so much about whether to play the World Cup every 2 years. It's about FIFA asserting their power to say, hey, we're changing things. We're gonna change things up. And meanwhile, CONMEBOL and UEFA saying, no, you can't do that. We disagree. We will threaten to boycott. We will actually come together, and UEFA and CONMEBOL have a memorandum of understanding that they'll actually compete together in the UEFA Nations League, taking some of the best teams from South America as well as the teams from UEFA, and have a competition. that would be in direct opposition to the biennial World Cup. And what would a biennial World Cup be without the teams from UEFA and CONMEBOL? Every single World Cup that has been played in the world has been won by a team from either UEFA or CONMEBOL. No country outside of those confederations have ever won a World Cup. So to me, it is fascinating. I think Nick's right completely. It is a house of cards that's built with FIFA, and it's about trying to get more of that pie. And with FIFA looking at every 2 years having a World Cup, from a money point of view, that makes complete sense for FIFA, right? For the rest of the world, we're going like, no, that destroys the competition as we know it. Every 4 years, we look forward to the World Cup. It has more meaning because there is that 4 year gap in between each tournament. Having it every 2 years is going to be it probably feels like it's not as special. For me, I can look back through my lifetime and go back through every single World Cup, whether it's even my first one, 78, 82, 86, 90, and where I was in my life during those stages. And I mean, it has a ton of meaning for me as a soccer fan. But yeah, no, it is very interesting. And it is FIFA and UEFA and CONMEBOL pushing back and back. The reality, though, at the end of the day, even without UEFA and without CONMEBOL, is that FIFA still has, I mean, all the CONCACAF countries, all the African countries, all the Asian countries. You combine all those numbers together, and FIFA still has a lot of leverage there. Now, from the commercialization point of view, in terms of viewers and soccer fans and sponsors, how many people would be interested in watching a World Cup without UEFA countries and without CONMEBOL countries? That would be a big hit. But you still have a large population around the rest of the world that would tune in to watch even the teams from Africa, United States, Mexico, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, that would still be interested. But it's not going to be as big as what we know as the World Cup. All right, moving on. Next up is Chris. Chris says, hi, guys. When it comes to the Juve documentary on Amazon, I agree with you 100% that it was awful, especially when compared to the other soccer documentaries they have done on Spurs and Chivas, which I found to be quite good. A MLS or a team in the championship battling for the promotion places would have been a better choice for Amazon, in my view. I also wanted to let you know that recently NBCSN showed a replay of the previous day's women's El Clasico between Real Madrid and Barcelona. With that in mind, I was wondering if NBC has the rights to La Liga Femenil, or is that a one-time thing? And Kartik, I think that's probably a one-time thing. I mean, I know that ATA Football has the rights to a lot of those games, and they have an agreement with NBC Sports to kind of share some of those games. So that's what probably that was, I believe.
Yes, I believe that too.
And then also, let me move on. Chris's other comment was, with NBCSN shutting down, it has got me thinking about the future of both CBS Sports Network and both FS1, FS2 going forward. With that in mind, my question to either of you is, do you think that either CBS Sports Network and or FS1, FS2 will shut down in the next few years? Thanks for providing excellent content the past year, and happy new year. I think FS2 is a possibility. Yeah. I mean, I'm surprised it's still going, really. I mean, it is a good alternate option. I mean, especially if you have a major competition, or if it's the World Cup and it's a good overflow channel where you have matches happening at the same time, and you've got maybe on Fox, maybe there's a college football game on, so you put, you mean, a World Cup game on FS1, and then the secondary World Cup game being played on FS2. But CBS Sports Network, I'm not so sure about that one, Kartik. Maybe that one sticks around a little bit longer, you think?
I'm not sure. They don't have a lot of programming, and they show a lot of reruns. I think it depends entirely on what happens with kind of college football and college basketball rights in the next this next rights cycle. Do they get the Pac-12 rights that, as are suspected? Then they would need the channel, particularly for basketball and for some football. Do they keep some of the other rights they have, the American Conference, among others? If they do, in Conference USA, then they need the channel. What soccer rights do they keep? Remember, both Champions League and Serie A are three-year cycles, which allowed them to grab them, in fairness, but now maybe works against CBS as they have to retain them. So we'll see. I think that that's a possibility to shut down. I think FS1 has enough programming, although the ratings for that channel are terrible. We don't know what the ratings are for CBS Sports Network, by the way, but we do know FS1's a Nielsen-rated channel, and the numbers are terrible for any event on that channel, even college football. I mean, college football does well, relatively speaking, to their other programming, but not well to college football on other networks. FS2, I think, will be gone at some point, as you mentioned.
All right, so we've got three more comments left from in the mailbag. Next up is RJ Hawkins. He says, great job with the show. Kind of amazing how much soccer TV news there is on a week-to-week basis, and you guys are on the leading edge of that space. I got to say that I'm very impressed that CBS has decided to put Champions League on their over-the-air network on a weekday afternoon, right in the middle of their syndication blocks with soap operas, news magazines, judges, and talk shows. Between Univision, Unimas, and now CBS, Champions League has a pretty high profile as far as the other over-the-air networks. I noticed that the Fox Corporation, in addition to their over-the-air Fox network, also owns My Network TV, which is available in 97% of U.S. households. Any chance they use that in their 2022 Qatar World Cup coverage this fall, particularly in the weekend time slots which conflict with American football? As far as World Cup coverage, I prefer the ESPN ABC family of networks, but I do have to admit that Fox really provided a lot of free over-the-air content in the 2018 World Cup, which ultimately helps grow the game. Thanks for your hard work in keeping soccer on our TVs. So yeah, some good points there by RJ. I would say that, I mean, the My Network TV, it's probably likely if they do show some World Cup content, it might be some of their World Cup documentaries. They did some for the 2018 World Cup where there were interviews with players or kind of more programming that may not be live programming. It might be just basically kind of on-demand type of programming or kind of long shelf life programming. I mean, Fox is going to go all out. I mean, the timing of the World Cup, the games, most of the games in the group stage will kick off at 5 a.m. Eastern time, and will go through till about 2 p.m. in the afternoon. So it's going to be all mornings. I mean, games at 5 a.m., 8 a.m., and 11 a.m., all the way through till roughly about 2 o'clock in terms of the coverage. So I don't think it's going to impact things as much. And you've got Fox, you've got FS1, you've got FS2, and also foxsports.com. Next up, Chris Day says, Happy New Year. Was hoping you might be able to help me with this. Let me see. This is related to TV rights. So do you know if MLS teams are still working with local regional sports networks for the upcoming 2022 season, or have all coverage rights gone to ESPN Plus and the other national networks, ESPN, ABC, Fox, TUDN? My favorite team is the Colorado Rapids, but living in Colorado, I'm 4 hours from Denver. All of the Rapids games have been geo-blocked on ESPN Plus because Altitude Sports, owned by the Kroenke family, had the rights. With YouTube TV as my main content provider, I can't get Altitude, and have thus been blocked out from watching most of the games. Have the same issue for the Avalanche in the NHL. I'm looking at the Rapids schedule for 2022. The TV listing portion only mentions ESPN Plus, so hoping that will allow me to watch more. I have thought about getting a VPN workaround, but worried about having to constantly make changes to watch local networks and news channels. And also, do you know if Fox Sports has renewed the rights for the CONCACAF Champions League this spring with the Rapids qualifying? I'm personally a little more interested. So, yeah, some great questions there from Chris. So, Chris, so the CONCACAF Champions League is going to be on Fox Sports and TUDN, Tudone in Spanish, Fox Sports in English. So no problem there. You will have access to those games. For the Colorado Rapids, chances are, I mean, those games will stick with their local regional sports networks for 2022. And chances are you will be geo-blocked from watching those games on ESPN+. So my recommendation would be to get a VPN. And with the VPN, it's really easy. Once you use it, you can use it on your laptop or whatever and be able to switch to a different area and then watch those games. That's probably the only way to do it, as far as I know. And then, last but not least, this is from Raymond, and in regards to MLS Parity, the podcast we did recently. Raymond says, I was listening to the podcast with Dave Denholm and Kartik, and I completely disagree with Dave. The frustrating thing is how they defend parity. Why does nobody ever talk about the drawbacks of forced parity? The biggest thing it lacks is innovation. Nowhere is this league really in the forefront of an innovation, and I believe it slows development in the front office with general managers, as well as head coaches and managers, as well as player development. Kartik, any thoughts on that in terms of some of the negatives of parity in MLS?
Yeah, I would say it's that. I mean, at the same time, you can have a league with a lot of parity and have everybody performing this at kind of a high level. So the Bundesliga, I think people now argue there's parity outside of Bayern Munich, which I don't think is completely true, but let's take that for argument's sake. Yet, you see teams... this is part of the reason Ricardo Pepi's gone to Augsburg. Player agents would prefer, if particularly they have attacking players, they go to the Bundesliga rather than the Premier League or Serie A or some other league where teams that are in the mid-table to lower mid-table range are sitting with 8-9 guys behind the ball most of the match. Because everybody's playing in a kind of creative attacking way in Germany. So that parity does lead to some degree of advanced player development. But the problem is in MLS, it's forced parity. And it also, I think, because of the forced parity, you have guys moving from team to team far too quickly. So they never properly settle in one location. So that's, I think, really the drawback of the forced parity is that every year there's an expansion draft. Every year there's some sort of roster exemption or roster rules that create some sort of complication. So, yeah, I mean, the player development is not where it needs to be. I'm hoping MLS Next Pro provides that link. I'm probably more hopeful about this than most people. Most people are just thinking of it as another MLS money grab. It probably is. I mean, I know money is the motivator for everything Soccer United Marketing and MLS do. But maybe they'll stumble upon something that really helps long-term player development in the process of trying to make more money so they have more games to put in a media package, which is why it appears they're launching the league in reality. But I'm hoping it's a benefit still.
Yeah, for a deeper dive on that topic about MLS parity, if you did miss the episode with Dave Denholm and Kartik, it was a really good one. I learned a lot from that one, and it is an interesting topic too. So you can find that at our website, worldsoccertalk.com, as well as on this podcast stream and on YouTube, on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/worldsoccertalk. Some great kind of a deeper dive, maybe like a 15-20 minute discussion about this very, very topic. All right, listeners, if you've got something you want to ask us, we'd love to read your comment out on air. You can always reach us via email through web@worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter @worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can always post your comments on worldsoccertalk.com. Kartik, before we head out, where can listeners find you on social media?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at KKFLA737.
All right, and you can find me personally, The Gaffer, but in terms of World Soccer Talk, is at World Soccer Talk. And heading into another weekend of world football, this is going to be cup competitions galore. You've got the Africa Cup of Nations starting on Sunday. You've got the FA Cup starting on Friday for the third round, as well as matches from around the world. Kartik, what should you do?
Enjoy your football.